You're listening to Brand Enabled, the human stories behind branding. This is the place to gain greater insight into the human side of branding. Join Gabriel Cohen as he sits down with branding experts, sharing real-life stories of how they faced complex issues along their journey. Learn how others are dealing with maximizing the power of brand and get valuable advice straight from your peers. Here's your host, Gabriel Cohen.
So it's great to have Alec Hansen on the show today, Chief Marketing Officer of Loan Depot. I'm wondering, Alec, if you are one of the most unique CMOs in the world, because I've not yet met a CMO who also is a founder and owner of a CrossFit brand.
Yes, I had a CrossFit gym for 13 years. Started in my garage. It's pretty wild. Back in the very, very early days of CrossFit.
So CrossFit and mortgages is a very natural fit.
I don't know. I think sales and fitness have a blend somewhere in there.
So you mentioned sales. And I think it's one of the, maybe we start with this point because it's really interesting. You're someone who, Chief Marketing Officer, maybe this is the other unique point, is your first marketing role is CMO, right? Most people who we talk to at a CMO level, they were like, oh yeah, I started in brand management at P&G and then I went to director and MVP and SVP. You're like, ah, no, screw all of that part. I'm going to go straight to the marketing C-suite. How did that happen?
My path here is very interesting. I've been in mortgage sales and sales leadership for 22 years. You know, I started at the street level, like literally like receptionist, $90 a loan, doing HELOCs in a strip mall, up through kind of being at my own self-originate mortgage guy kind of leadership. And I've always viewed that sales and marketing are almost two sides of the same coin. They're very different things, but they're very connected. And so as an originator, as a leader, marketing became a second language, so to speak, on things that I'm, you know, very passionate about. It opens the door. Without it, sales is really hard. Marketing really helps sales. And so I've been very passionate about it for a long time. In fact, the last 5-6 years of my career where I was running the Western United States for our sales organization, a lot of my focus was started to trend into marketing. That's when I started my podcast. We were chatting about that before we went live. That's when I wrote my book. That's when I started getting really active on social media as a tool for human connection. That kind of pushed me forward. I was very motivated in that space to the point that my CEO grabbed me and was like, we want you to consider being the CMO. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm a sales guy. But I think, Gabriel, that I bring a really unique perspective to the role. And I feel like I said before, I think sales and marketing are very interconnected. And so I'm hoping that my influence there can really drive the needle for us.
So the CEO tapped you for the role. It wasn't like this part of your ambition or master plan to take over.
This was a very left field moment for me in my career where you can obviously tell I'm passionate about it. So we can dive into that. And had been on the sidelines, putting my passion front and center for everyone to hear about things I thought we should be doing or angles I thought we should be covering. And then it turns out he opened up the opportunity and said, I really think you can make an impact here, and really pushed me into considering it. And so here I am.
And so maybe talk about transition then. Like, what was that transition like for you in thinking, okay, I'm now taking over all these new skill sets. I'm coming at this with a sales mentality, but not having been part of the marketing organization. And maybe talk about what were you replacing? Was CMO, was it a new role in the organization, or were you replacing an outgoing?
We've had several different strategies over the years at Loan Depot around marketing. And you have to kind of remember our organization has multiple origination kind of avenues. So we have a very, very large successful joint venture group. We have a direct to consumer, people would equate it to a call center group. And we have our distributed retail or in-market sales professionals group where I come from. And really under Frank's leadership, bringing all that together under one marketing organization, it was a little bit fragmented over the years. A certain part of the marketing group was supporting the direct side, our JV side. For a long time, we had wholesale and then our retail side. But there wasn't really an overarching strategy combining all of that together. So when I got tapped on the shoulder, it was more to kind of bring that all under one roof. And so talk about the transition. I think it was probably more rough for the team freaking out that the sales guy is showing up one day and what the heck's he going to do here. But in the last 3-4 months, it's been incredibly enjoyable. I think we've all meshed really well. I think they understand my viewpoint. I'm hardcore, but I'm a likable guy. So we're making really good progress.
So with that, like, what was your philosophy and approach like in the first 90 days or sort of establishing a plan or what you were going to do differently? Sometimes people use the, we're going to go from this to this. Like, what was your approach?
I have several things that are really high on my priority list and kind of call them my North Stars. And one, I've been at Loan Depot for 12 years, coming on my 13th year. So I live and breathe this company's culture. I've been part of building it for so many years. And one of the things that a lot of organizations can do well, but I think we can do better, is really explain who we are and show our heartbeat to the community that we're serving. I don't think they know us the way I know us. And so, you know, I come from a long line of storytellers. And so from, you know, my father and grandfather are all big storytellers. And when I look at our opportunity in telling our story, that turns into that brand development kind of conversation and that kind of, but one of my main priorities is I don't think everyone knows Lone Depot the way I do. And they should, because it's an incredible organization with incredible people, with incredible purpose. And the more that our community and our customers can understand that, the more that they're going to be drawn to potentially working with us or giving us a chance to serve them in the time of financing need.
And how well understood is that story even internally? Like, is that part of it?
The opportunity is both. I mean, the both is to continue to tell it internally and externally. And we're a young organization. You know, we're only like 13 years old. So we're still like a barely a teenager. We're also writing our story, as every company, I believe, should be. I think you should continually be writing your story. It doesn't end. I think it's always an evolution. And so part of the excitement that you're maybe feeling, or that I get have right now, is I get to help retell that and re-explain and really showcase not just externally, which is going to be fun, but internally too.
So low mortgages and so many aspects of financial services industry are so undifferentiated because everyone's selling the same thing. Challenge you a second. Like, what is that story? How do you distill that story in a way that is authentic to who you are? And then how do you look at it in terms of, is it about them being differentiated? Is it about salience?
Yeah.
Like, what is that story? And how do you tell that in a differentiated way?
So there are some parts of the mortgage industry that do have differentiation. An example of that would be technology. A lot of companies are renting their own mortgage tech from these giant conglomerates, and they do look and feel very similar because they're all operating on the similar tech platforms. So larger organizations, Lone Depot, Rocket, some others, were strategic and put, you know, Lone Depot did about $100 million in about 8 years ago building its own tech platform. So there are some points of differentiation there where all of a sudden the customer experience is going to be a little bit more streamlined or different than another organization. And we can tell that story and we can kind of showcase, hey, here's how these things are different. But to your original point, Gabriel, yes, you know, a 30-year conventional mortgage that we're selling to Fannie Mae is the same product somebody else is selling to Fannie Mae. And so I think that the opportunity for differentiation does come in brand. It does come in human connection. It does come in relationship and experience. And that's where we get a chance to really start showcasing what makes us different and what makes us tick. I hate to say this so simplistically, but you ever been the guy at a party where you say the joke not very loud, but then somebody else has it louder and everyone laughs? You know, sometimes it's just telling your story the right way to make that connection. And that's where the opportunity lies. Sometimes too, it's meeting the customers where they're at. There's a lot of mortgage companies that are doing a very subpar, their social media strategy is extremely lacking. And some of that is just, they're not contemporarily meeting the customer where they're at. And that's another point for differentiation.
Talk a bit about what that story for Lone Depot is, if you could take us under the hood on the, like, how did you get there?
Like what our story is?
Yeah, like, okay, like our brand stands for, what's at the top of the brand house? What's our sort of brand North Star? What's the sort of narrative that goes with that? And then if you can then take us through, like, well, what was the process? Like, is that codified? Is that in a presentation? Is that used for all onboarding? Was that something that you came up with internally? Did you work with partners to get there?
Yeah.
What was the buy-in to get there?
Yep. You can't tell Lone Depot's story without talking about Anthony Hsieh, our founder, the guy who came here and built this thing from nothing. I mean, his story is incredible. He's like literally the epitome of the American dream, you know, came here from nothing, built an amazing company. And for a long time, Anthony Hsieh and Lone Depot were synonymous because it was just his presence. And now as we become a teenager and we're starting to kind of walk on our own, so to speak, Lone Depot has been rewriting its story and kind of coming back to market and explaining who we are. And so from an entrepreneurial-based, tech-centered pioneer organization into a more mature company is really where our story's evolving. And then when you kind of carve deeper on that and say, okay, well, what do we exist to do? We really have three core functions. Non-banks, historically, go back all the way back in time, non-bank mortgage companies were built and designed to serve first-time homebuyers. It's really what they were designed to do. Fannie, Freddie, FHA, that's the game. And so some of this has been a little bit of a reawakening. Of course, we want to do loans for people that are buying vacation homes or investment properties and all that stuff. But the first-time homebuyer is a really underserved community. It's a huge opportunity and it's in our DNA. Come back to Anthony Hsieh being the original loan officer for his parents because they didn't speak English and he had to translate for them. Like, that's in our soul. And then the secondary kind of component underneath that is serving the diverse communities. You know, we were number three in the country last year for serving diverse communities, but we want to be number one. And those emerging communities, again, I'm going to just say this because it just needs to be said. My dad's been in this industry for 40 years. So I've watched his career and it's been absolutely inspiring. And I went right out of college, and graduated in December and started January in the mortgage industry and spent 22 years there. The amount of times I've watched my father and myself experience the mortgage lender being one tier above used car ripoffs, you know, artist, has been brutal. And so talk about some of these underserved communities, first-time homebuyers, the diverse minority communities. A lot of these have been underserved. They've been manipulated. They've been abused. And so a chance for us to come in and really put our flag down and say, hey, we're going to be known for serving first-time homebuyers. We're going to be known for serving the diverse community. And then on a third kind of pillar, we're going to be known for serving our veteran community. Little known fact, loanDepot pioneered the VA renovation loan for veterans years ago. Now it's available by everybody because it's a VA product, but we actually worked with them to build this whole thing. And so we got a lot of, like, our purpose kind of comes down to those core areas. It gets a little bit more nuanced because you can tell that we want to serve the underserved. We want to be in that position. And so then you get into niche products that are like renovation lending or reverse mortgage financing, which is another very stigmatized product, misunderstood product. And those are the areas where we really want to shine for the consumer.
Talk a bit about the challenges now for first-time homebuyers, because from everything I've been reading, the odds are pretty stacked against them across so many dynamics, not just the market dynamic and the supply and demand factors, but also there's a lot of entrenchment around the opportunities for first-time homebuyers in favor of current homeowners at the expense of first-time homebuyers that makes it harder for first-time homebuyers. Maybe talk about what's happening in the industry at the moment, how things have evolved, and what you can do about it.
So from a historical perspective, in this moment in time, we have an inventory problem in the United States. And because we have an inventory problem, it's very hard for people to get into any homes at all, whether they're moving up or finding their first one. Now, I think that will start to ease and be solved from two things. The new construction community is doing everything they can to build as many houses as possible. And I do think we're going to see a reprieve in rates to a degree that will get some people to move. No one wants to move going from a 3% rate to, I'm just going to say, 7.
You're going to downsize, but you're going to be paying the same mortgage.
Yeah. But in my opinion, somebody will move to a 3% to a 5. Because then they'll actually look at the payment and they'll be like, yeah, that's not that much different. Optically, 3, 5, but payment-wise, people go, okay, that makes sense. So I think we'll see some of that open up. But historically too, Gabriel, what's fascinating is there's more options for first-time homebuyers than ever before. There's lower down payment options that never really existed historically before. You know, you get 3% down, 3.5% down for FHA. VA, there's no down payment required. There's bonds and down payment assistance programs and lots of localized things that people just need to get educated on that are available to them. We have a loan officer in New Jersey that year to date has helped up to $280,000 in down payment assistance to people in New Jersey. It's incredible. But like, that's a very localized solution that unless you're working with somebody there in the market who knows, they're not going to be able to help you navigate that stuff. So there's more solutions now than ever before for first-time homebuyers. And so there's more need for education right now than ever before. And we just posted an educational video launched today about how you don't need 20% down. Everyone in mortgage is like, well, duh. It's not duh. Literally watched comments come in going, why am I saving then for this much? Like today, that's a real thing. So there's never been a bigger need for education than now. And that's really going to help first-time homebuyers navigate this tough market. Because the more they're equipped, the more they can go out and figure out creative solutions, so to speak, of things that exist to help them get their first house. But yeah, there are headwinds. You know, inventory is inventory. It's a problem.
So the training and education piece sounds like it's a core aspect of the brand and content and comm strategy. When you think about what you talk a bit about that, but also I'd love to hear like what else is really in the remit? What is your focus really on?
Well, so let's unpack education for a minute. Mortgages is one of those things that isn't taught in school. So it's one of those things that people are just clueless about. And I've been in the industry a long time. Even people who are exceptionally financially savvy in their own life, you bring mortgage in and they're going, I don't know what this means. Even people that are, you'd think that they would get this. It's still new because people don't use it very often. Maybe every 5 to 7 years, maybe once in their life, you know, maybe a couple refinances and that's it. So education's always been a lack in our industry for several reasons. I mean, people want to gatekeep. I don't want to tell you the answer until you start working with me because I get that, but apply with me first and then I'll help you. And so there's been a little of that like scarcity mindset in mortgage, but where the opportunity lies is this, in my opinion, is the abundance mindset, the open hand. Here's the information. Go use it as you should. Whether you use us or not, at least somebody taught you how to do this stuff. that really stems back to my original, like early days originating loans. I will never forget in my early career, let's say, Gabriel, you and I were working together and you got a better deal somewhere else. I don't know how they did it, but somebody got you a better deal than I could. I actually remember telling customers, as much as it burned me on the inside because I'm so competitive and I wanted to win every deal, go with them. I don't know how they did that deal, but it's just the best on the market that I could ever seen. You trusted me at that point. And customers that I actually told to go somewhere else because it was better for them became some of my most referral-centric, like past customers. Like I didn't even work with them and they still sent me their family members and everybody else because they knew that at least I was going to be honest and trustworthy as a provider. And that's the same approach we're taking at Loan Depot, which is, look, you just need to know the facts. Here's the truth about how this world works. Here's what no one's teaching you. And take this information, go be equipped and go make great decisions. And we're here if you need us.
So now talk a bit about like what that education, that authenticity is key in a lot of what you do, but talk about sort of what are some of the other key initiatives that relate to marketing and brand that you're focused on.
We have an incredibly diversified, decentralized group of salespeople that are in market today that are some of the best in class. One of my unique opportunities to help them tell their story, both digitally and locally. The traditional localized mortgage pro who I was, who built my whole business on, never played in the digital landscape, Well, social didn't exist back then in the glory days, but you know, now as it's YouTube and social media and TikTok and all these platforms have just exploded, these localized professionals have this humongous opportunity to become more digital and to build personal brand and to kind of scale themselves and their personality. And so I have a huge opportunity to help put that megaphone in their hands and get them out in the world. I mean, you and I talked a little bit about my own podcast that I started. I started it because I felt like I couldn't coach and mentor people about podcasting if I didn't have a clue what it was and I've never played in it. And so it's kind of one of the reasons I launched my own was to help other people decide if it's best to launch theirs. So I have a huge opportunity with our group that I was leading on the Western side of the United States to now kind of scale across and help them all learn how to tell their story digitally. Because, you know, I think we'll talk more about brand too, but this concept of a coin and this analogy of a coin always sticks with me. I think that personal brand and corporate brand actually should play together. And you, Gabriel, an individual, have your own worldviews, skill sets, consultative value, wisdom, experience that complements a national brand. And we should play off each other because I need you and you need me if I can help you in the right ways. And so that's really a unique and fun opportunity too that I get to play with, which is how do we get the superpower our localized heroes and let their stories, you know, make an impact.
Are you able to, that's interesting because I think in any sort of decentralized channel-based approach where you have an individual, right, whether it's financial services, right, retirement life or realty, probably even more as that component. Have you been able to, in some ways, codify that to say, look, our brand stands for this. If we get people who stand for these values or have these attributes, believe these sorts of things, then that is sort of alchemy of both is where the sparks really start to fly? Or is it really just at an that part of the equation really more gut or instinctual? It'd be interesting, like how you can codify and scale that in some ways.
Well, so I think we're at a convergent point in lending, which is very interesting and unique for me. As digital, when I talk digital, I'm talking social media and all these things, these have become forefront in humanity's existence and everybody's staring at their phones and deep in these platforms. This has become a convergence point between brand and personal brand and all these different things. There's a belief that I hold that people work with people that they like, know, and trust. And when you're talking about, let's go up another level for a second, we'll come back down to this. Forever, certain players in our industry have tried to commodify getting a mortgage. It's a commodity, you just get the best deal and you move on. And the reason that that's failed is because it's not totally true. Totally is the right word. If you, Gabriel, want to just get a refinance and you just want to lower your payment and you're looking at the rates on Google and you're trying to go, okay, what can I get here? There's a little bit of commoditization in that. But even in that situation, there's still some core questions that you should answer that somebody should consult with you about to make sure that you're making the right decision for yourself. A great example is somebody in that situation looking to get a simple rate and term refinance, lower their payment, but they have high interest credit card debt. And nobody just says, hey, have you ever thought about just rolling this into this new payment and getting rid of these credit cards? Because sometimes a consumer might just hold those in two different places in their mind. My credit card debt, my auto loan, that just lives over here. I just want to talk about my mortgage. But a really savvy professional would pose the question. So you can't simply commodify it because everyone's life journeys and experiences are radically different. And so that's where it's been this tension of like, hey, this is a commodity. No, it's not. And this is where we're seeing the convergence of large national brands. Because here's the thing. Humans love brands. We love them so much. We wear Nikes. We love Amazon. We love brands. At the same time, when it comes to like, you know, brain surgery, I really want a human. I want the best. I want, you know, this is a big deal. In there somewhere is mortgages. It's not a brain surgery level, but it's in there. So now we're seeing, okay, well, people do business with people they like, know, and trust. They love brands. Let's watch as these two things come together. Another example of this is loanDepot is one of the most prolific interceptors or engagers of the digital client. The digital customer who's pushing buttons on the internet, they're talking to loanDepot at a national level. The amount of lead buy and sophistication and telephony that is going on in that world, an individual can't do. They can't do it. Our contact center is making 1 million calls a day. Individual can't scale. They can't do that. But what happens in these contexts is when someone says, hey, I live in Utah and I want to buy a house in Utah. We go, great. You know, we got a loan guy down the street in Utah. Would you like to talk to him? And they go, actually, yeah, that sounds great. And this digital to local thing is converging as we speak. And so the more we empower our localized people to showcase who they are and to get their professionalism on the digital stage, the higher our conversion is for the digital customer. So I think we're coming to a place where both are intersecting.
How are you seeing this difference in behavior across even different generational consumer segments?
Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about the trend for a minute. Trend is people are becoming more and more digital every day. They live it on their screens every day. And so even if you go up to the boomers and they're still on the screens all the time, they definitely are acting differently and they're using the resources differently and they're not on TikTok as much as they're on like Facebook, but they're still in these platforms. And we're finding really from the large trend is people tend to start online and they tend to end local, but it's a personal preference almost. I mean, so Anthony had this comment back in the day. He said, you have to serve a customer the way they want to be served. I can't tell you how many times we're launching our own AI-based chatbot and we're in this whole like world right now, which is very interesting because the amount of people that just want to chat on the internet and they don't want to call, they don't want to be on the phone with you is growing at astronomical numbers. We have people who push a button on the internet and say, I would love to talk to a mortgage professional. And then when we call them, they never answer the phone. They told us to call them. They said, please, I want information, call me. And then they're like, nah.
But actually text me.
Please don't do that, actually.
No, because you text me, okay, but so how do you deal with that? Or do you like do a pilot? Are you trying different things?
No,
I can totally relate to that.
Well, of course. We stood up text solutions. And so we're now texting directly to customers. We're asking questions. Like I mentioned on the chatbot, we're getting more sophisticated than that on the website because people just want information. And so like you got to serve the customer the way they want to be served.
But what I'm saying is if they ask you to call them, are you still doing that or are you actually trying something different?
So we just broke a meeting last week on this, 2 weeks ago. And so they tell us they want us to call them. So we call them and they don't answer. So we just built out 3 text cadences to follow up with them with different styles and language choice and formality versus informality, emojis, whatever. And we've pushed that now into existence because they clearly want something. They just don't want to be harassed on a phone with a sales guy, which I totally get. And surprise, they're responding on text. And then it warms up. And then in fact, we're actually finding, Gabriel, that introductory video texts go the farthest because a personalized message from me to you saying, Gabriel, Alec Hansen, loanDepot, we got your information. I'd love a chance to talk to you, see if you need anything. Text me back or call me. It humanizes it even further than just a text message. And now I'm not necessarily some annoying sales guy, which maybe I am, but at least you saw my face, you heard my voice, get a taste of who I am. And those actually convert the highest in response.
Immediately start to imagine that creates a lot more opportunities as a way to really bring that brand idea to life beyond the brand as identity and just messaging. But as you think about the voice and the personality and even the backdrop, person says, and what they're wearing, there's a lot of things that you can start to think about. Okay, what does that look like coming from Home Depot in a way that's ownable? Did I say Home Depot? I meant loanDepot.
Oh, I get obviously. That all the time. Yeah.
Compared to another, like even if you turned off the subtitle, like if you didn't know it was loanDepot, is there a way to do that that feels okay? Like no one else would be able to do this. This couldn't be any other brand. Is that how do you think about it like that?
Well, we're in the very early innings of this strategy. So right now it's a lot about learning and it's a lot about trying new things. and trying new things by different age groups and demographics and seeing how they want to respond and really starting to learn the customer more. It's fun and exciting too, because it is so new and we are figuring it out, but you have to. They're not answering their phones anymore. You got to evolve.
When you think about brand performance, when you think about brand measurement, how do you combine that sort of real-time data with maybe, you know, the traditional brand world is like, you know, you would do your brand perception study once a year to understand how well are we doing around awareness and unaided awareness and funnel metrics against the competitors. But then you've also got this, we're trying things out in the moment, because more data doesn't necessarily mean more insights. Talk about how you think about brand measurement at that sort of high level and micro level as well.
Well, let me answer it this way, and we can maybe open this conversation up. So we're in a down cycle in the mortgage industry. Mm-hmm. Those come every decade to every 10 to 15 years, there's a down cycle. And those cycles are very violent. Mortgage companies flex and grow and shrink depending on what the waves that come. And so facing a down cycle, you have to be very thoughtful about where you spend your money, what you do, how you do it. And the decisions we would have made in a normal market or even a market that's, you know, swinging up would be different than today. So today, our priority from this kind of brand exposure, all this stuff is really what I would call guerrilla warfare centric. Some of our major competitors, the Rockets of the world, you know, these guys are massive branding monsters. They're Super Bowl commercials. They're sponsoring jockeys. Like they're putting their brand front and center in all these major platforms and positions. Our strategy as we navigate this down cycle is going straight on it through social media. Because to me, that's the guerrilla warfare opportunity in this market. It's not who can spend the most money and make the biggest bang on a Super Bowl commercial. It's who can get their message, their soul, front and center, their audience. And if you kind of go back, Gabriel, to kind of where we're focused, these first-time homebuyers, they're on social. They're the 35-year-olds. They're the people that are messing around with TikTok and been on Instagram for a long time and really don't go to Facebook anymore. That's our audience. That's our community. And so when we talk about where we want to go with our brand and where we want to make the impact, it's in those areas. Yes, we're the Major League Baseball sponsor. We have a long contract. We have Loan Depot Park in Miami. But as we look at this cycle in this moment, our opportunity is to play in the streets, on people's phones, where they're at.
So give me an example of how to do that in a way that works, right? Because if I'm on Instagram or I'm scrolling on TikTok or even on LinkedIn, I'm like, how do you make that work? Because it's not like, oh, great, I've got something from Loan Depot. Especially to your point where there might be 5 to 8 years in between me thinking about my mortgage needs or my refinancing. So how do you make that work in a combination of the category and the episodic nature of the actual decision?
So it's going to sound simplistic in the beginning, and then there's a lot of nuance to it. So let's just start with education. So if we're talking about first-time homebuyers, I think we all come in from a position of they just don't know what they don't know. And so there are people that could buy today, right now, operating under bad assumptions, who aren't buying or aren't putting themselves into the market because they have bad information. If we can inspire those people to get educated, get on a plan and get informed about some options, we'll help inspire them to start now instead of waiting, you know, 2 years. At the same time, we're also building goodwill for the next cycle. So yeah, right now it might not be, you know, you're not buying the second because you feel like home prices are too inflated. You maybe have a personal view that they might come down, which is people do, but who's in your life right now giving you options, sharing insights, talking about what's going on in lending, in real estate? Our opportunity is both short-term and long-term in those spaces. And so go on.
Really interesting, your point about the first-time home buyer, because you've got both then trying to find those people who were in those buy moments and also building brand in the long-term. What are the predictors, or how do you target someone who is a first-time home buyer? Is it based on a set of other actions that indicate or increase the probability that they are a first-time home buyer? Obviously you want to allocate your dollars in reaching as many of the right people as possible.
So there's some pretty fun stuff we can do with paid advertising on Meta and TikTok and these brands where lookalike audiences are very powerful. We obviously are closing a lot of loans for first-time home buyers. So we have a data set. We can create very clean lookalike audiences of people that just bought and, you know, go after that group. We can obviously target our past customers and look for their referral networks, their personal target networks. There's some really creepy stuff that we can do where we can, if people are going into open houses, we can kind of pay attention and find out who's going into where. There's some wild kind of next gen marketing stuff that it's a little stalkery. It's in line with like Siri and Alexa are listening to you stuff, but we can also learn and listen. And as we put out pieces of content, you almost get instantaneous feedback of, is this right, wrong, indifferent? My favorite was a really good friend of mine put out a piece of content that went pretty viral. And he's just a mortgage professional. He's just trying to sell loans. And his piece of content was, how much can you afford if you make $100,000 a year in buying a house? And it's fascinating because the content was just math. It was, here's how the guidelines work. And here's what the government's, you know, Fannie Mae guidelines say you can afford if you make this much money. Just math. And the outrage that came at him online for people that felt that it was financially irresponsible to buy a house at that level, even though the guidelines qualified you, was just fascinating to me, because the government and the loan says you could get this loan. You could go right now, get this loan for this level of house. But the people on the internet were like, this is a bad financial decision. You should never buy that house. You'll be house poor. So my comment is, you get this instantaneous feedback on these platforms that show you where people's passions are, where the need for education is, and where you can play more aggressively and where you can double down. And I think that's going to be one of our, you know, and again, we're talking down cycle strategy right now, where we got every penny matters. And if I'm going to spend a cent, I got to make sure that I have the highest chance of getting it in front of the right person than if I'm putting out a piece of paid content on like a display ad or going on to a commercial or any of that stuff, radio ad.
What, you know, what if you had to adjust? So what does your down cycle, what does your up cycle playbook have that your down cycle playbook doesn't, or how does that change?
Well, I think in an upcycle, you can experiment a lot more because you got, I don't want to call it play money, but you got a chance to try out some strategies that you might not normally do. I think you also have the ability to play a lot level higher level branding plays. And that is like the Major League Baseball stuff. That is like Super Bowl commercials. You can really play up there. But I also think we're in that land in between too, personally, where it's like, you know, when was the last commercial you watched? It's like, right? Like, it's like, I don't know how much humans are doing that much anymore. I mean, they're picking their phone up real fast if they're forced to watch a commercial. So I think we're in a convergence point too there, where it's like, I think the world's changing and the people are kind of done with certain traditional marketing too.
And then how do you keep spirits up and the morale up? Because it's an industry thing. Again, you know, it's going to happen at some point. You think about your role as a CMO, that connection into to culture and morale, especially having been in an organization so long.
Well, I mean, it really starts with your purpose. You know, we get very transactional in lending accidentally because we're just doing a repetitive task every month over and over again. And it's Groundhog Day. Like, it just feels that way sometimes. But when you pull back, and you realize that you just helped this first-time homebuyer buy a house they never thought they could afford, and they changed their life. Or we did a deal for a special operations SEAL who flew back just at Christmas time and signed his deal, closed his deal, and then went back and was deployed again. And we had like a lot of people wrapping around this because it was a very small window to get this guy's paperwork ready and everything done. And like, those are the kind of things that when you really center on, they can help you through the down cycle. You also have to realize too that perspective plays such a huge role in maintaining morale. I'll say this poorly. Some salespeople and organizations as well just came through some of the best years they've ever had in their life. And if you blew all your money, you know, we try to coach people. If you went out and bought the new house and bought the new car, elevated your lifestyle, but a lot of people are very smart and they didn't, and that they can weather a down cycle. Really try to preach this in lending. You know, you have to average out the years. And you'll probably be doing pretty good, but it can be tough to do this. So perspective and purpose are the ways that, and that's again, like as a storyteller, that's our opportunity, right? We can keep sharing that over and over again. And that's where the morale really latches onto.
So you try to communicate, you sort of use internal comms channel to tell those stories as well, to be able to scale them.
Absolutely. And we, besides intranets and all that other stuff and emails and all that stuff, we leverage our own social media. We tell stories there all the time, what's happening. We encourage our people to follow and connect into that world as well, so that they can see how that world, see the stories there too.
I want to just touch on a couple of things just relate to your own sort of personal principles. When you think about your guiding principles in leading and managing people, what are the things that guide you?
First into the breach has always been a concept that I've latched onto as a leader in my core purpose. I watched my dad do it. I feel like if you're going to tell people things they should do or encourage them in certain ways and things they should do, I hope you've done it. And I hope that you have the, you know, I really have that respect when people say, come along with me, I'll do it with you and I'll be alongside you. I loved when I was leading salespeople at a local level, like a branch, I'd love to go on the street in the field with them and make sales calls, you know, because you got to be into the breach with people. But I think the other piece I'd complement that with is just this radical empathy. You know, everyone's going through shit, you know what I mean? Like everyone's under the water. There's always stuff going on. And we come into work and we put on the work face. But something's happening out there underneath everybody's life. If you just do your best to just have a level of awareness and empathy that something else could be going on that you just don't know. If you treat every interaction with a little bit of that, I feel like you're a better leader. You can help inspire people better. I think those two things are kind of a core to what I try to live my life by.
Great. Thanks for being on the show. Been wonderful to have you. Really interesting.
Awesome. Thanks, Gabriel. It's been a blast.
That's all for today's episode. We hope these insights from top brand leaders help you as you face your own branding roadblocks. Remember that you're not alone in the challenges you face, and there are always impactful, creative, and human ways to solve brand problems. If you would like to further connect with fellow elite brand leaders and join our community, send an email to gcohen@monogle.com. Thank you for joining us. See you on the next one.